Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Line in Boston.
From WVUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The American folk music tradition has always tracked the sentiments and conscience of the American experience. A generation and more grew up with folk music songs, singing out for equality and freedom and against injustice and war. As war loomed this time, American folk musicians seemed to turn to a repertoire of songs less defiant and more reflective, more emotional, more personal. On Point Friday is back tonight, and we're responding now to Weeks of War, musically, with folk singer-songwriter Greg Greenway. But we begin with developments in northern Iraq, where Kurdish fighters have rolled into Mosul after government troops abandoned the city, and Mosul has descended into chaos. Michael Goldfarb, correspondent for WBUR's Inside Out documentary unit, spent the day in Mosul. I asked him to describe the scene.
It's brought a wave of lawlessness, and I use the term in a very precise way, Tom, because once the Iraqi forces left town after negotiations with the U.S. military in the middle of the night, there really was no civilian infrastructure for maintaining law and order. And the news, of course, brought huge excitement around here because the city of Mosul is the biggest city in this whole area. Many people from around here are from Mosul or have family there, and we're returning to see them. But there were a lot of people from Erbil and the villages between here and Mosul, a distance of about 60 kilometers, who simply went to loot. And throughout the day, I spent quite a bit of the day in residential neighborhoods of Mosul, and people there were really quite despairing because they felt that it was outsiders who were looting their city, although that's not entirely true. There were people from Mosul who joined in. At first, it was government-related buildings, but then it just became a more general kind of looting.
Describe the kind of thing you saw there, Michael.
Well, let's see. The Ba'ath Party had a special food store for its members, and it was adjacent to the World Food Program food warehouse. The Ba'ath Party headquarters were, of course, looted, but the World Food Program was looted as well and set on fire. The most amazing thing was just anything and everything was taken. I mean, ceiling fans. I saw enormous tractor tires being rolled by teenagers, like you know, the old days when you used to roll a hoop down the street, but these were tractor tires taller than the kids themselves. Now, the thing that you have to understand, Tom, is this went on till the late afternoon, and then through the mosques and through the influence of the local clan leaders, a kind of civil defense set of meetings were held. The American military eventually tried to set up a cordon around the city, but you have to understand there are simply not enough troops in this area to seal off or to just set up checkpoints around the city the size of Mosul, which is in excess of 1 million people. It's spread over a flat plain either side of the Tigris River, and there just aren't enough American soldiers around to make this work.
Michael Goldfarb, we're reading all kinds of accounts, including the university, the Mosul University's library, with rare ancient manuscripts sacked despite appeals blaring from mosque minarets to people to stop destroying their city, people in Mosul saying this is barbaric. What, in your view, has been lost in Mosul today, physically and in, I don't know, terms of morale or even hope? I'm not sure.
I think that in terms of physically, the city's been fairly, I hate to use this word because the U.S. military uses it in a quite different sense, but it's been degraded pretty seriously over the last decade, certainly, and probably over the entire reign of Saddam. It's a city that's in bad shape. But the hope that was represented by the liberation was, at least today, fairly short-lived because people, you know, realized that they had been abandoned, essentially. They've been abandoned to lawlessness, and the mood, you know, shifted. There's been, Tom, at least in this part of Iraq, a tremendous appreciation of the American action against Saddam. Now, this is not an appreciation that is found everywhere in Iraq, and certainly it's not found, you know, in other parts of the world. But here in Kurdistan, where I've been, I mean, there's just been a unanimity about this, that this is the right thing to be doing, to overthrow the regime. And I think that people suddenly realized, thinking people anyway, that having overthrown the regime, that there's all this other world that needs to be constructed, and there isn't the civil infrastructure to give it a foundation.
Donald Rumsfeld said today in Washington, Michael, that this kind of thing happens at the end of tyrannies. This is a kind of the price of passage. Can you see where order will come from and how soon in Mosul?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I was watching that too, and the Secretary of Defense was making the case with his usual forceful manner, which many people in the rest of the world find frightening. And I take his point, because it is true that when there's a changeover in this manner, in a military manner, there will be lawlessness because you can get away with it. But I think, having been on the ground watching it, what it reveals about this society is that the ability of Iraqis who have spent a quarter of a century in this quite extraordinary totalitarian nightmare in which the fear of the regime seeped into every corner. I mean, even today in Mosul, there were people saying, Saddam is here. Saddam is here in Mosul. He's in a mosque. He's hiding. Mm-hmm. That's the level. And now, they've all been watching TV. They've seen Baghdad fall. They know the regime is finished. And yet the fear is so profound, the belief that somehow it will come leeching back out at them. So people don't quite know how to behave. They simply don't know what to do. And this is, I mean, something that I don't think the Secretary of Defense has any idea about. The lawlessness is right throughout the country, and it is a profoundly dangerous moment here. And until the U.S. military and the British military change their mindsets from, you know, offensive war to security policing, and do it in numbers, have people in numbers on the streets, I fear that this country will be in a dangerously anarchic state.
Michael Goldfarb, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Michael Goldfarb is correspondent for WBUR's Inside Out documentary unit. He spoke with me earlier from Erbil in northern Iraq. On Point Friday is back tonight. After weeks of war and now liberation and looting, we're turning to music with singer-songwriter Greg Greenway.
I had a day in the life, it was a crossroads. I saw somebody come, I saw somebody go. Some expression on their faces, different ends of the road. See, somebody lost the struggle, that's how it was said. Someone was born with a long journey up ahead. No one had a map, no instructions to be read. Well, it's all I need to know. It's just so. Whoa. I say to myself every little day, the world's brand new. The sun comes up, the clouds roll through. Everything else is just up to you. Every little day, the world's brand new. I felt terrible, I felt lucky at the way things are. Like a glad accident, like a bright shooting star. Like a brave little ripple in an ocean so large. Well, it's all I need to know. It's just so. Whoa. Say to myself every little day, the world's brand new. The sun comes up, the clouds roll through. Everything else is just up to you. Every little day, the world's brand new. Thank you. Myself saying words without thinking. Every little day, every little day. Ooh, 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 ooh. Face to the big questions, nobody knows why. Some people smile a knowing smile, some turn away and hide. So much has to happen between hello and goodbye. That's all I need to know. It's just so. I say to myself, every world's brand new. The sun comes up, the clouds roll through. Everything else is just up to you. Every little thing, the world's brand new.
For weeks now, we've seen the endless images of war troops moving in and on, fires smoldering, victory signs flashing, icons tumbling, smiles welcoming, and bitter tears streaming. Another generation of Americans has now witnessed war. Tonight, we're turning to music to give us what words and pictures cannot. Music. Music for young soldiers. Music for the mothers of soldiers. Music for children wounded by war. Music to open a space in the heart beyond bombs and fire. Singer-songwriter Greg Greenway is with me in the studio tonight. And you can join us, too, at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Welcome, Greg Greenway. Great to have you with us tonight.
It's wonderful to be here.
It is wonderful to have you. We've been in the grip of what everybody in the country, everyone certainly in Iraq and around the world has been in the grip of. And waiting for the moment when we could pull back just a minute, because I don't know about you, Greg, but for me, sometimes that gusher of words and, above all, images, it just becomes too much. Images, you know, fireballs of flame and all the blood and suffering, and they're relentless, but I'm not sure where they're taking me.
Well, it's a very dehumanizing thing, and that's exactly the opposite of what music is. I mean, I feel like my job in the world is to humanize. So many of the issues I talk about in my music are all about putting a human face on something. And it's just it's remarkable that we have cameras where we have cameras.
Yeah, everywhere. By the tank tread, at the head of the wounded child, right in the face of the crying mother, they are everywhere.
Yeah, and it's bringing war to us in a way, although edited still, but it's bringing it to a way we've never seen it before. I mean, we've never seen the enemy like this. We've never seen our soldiers like this. And I imagine the pressure on our soldiers is just unbelievable.
Yeah, of course, in any war, and now this extra dimension of being being right there, sometimes at the most horrible moments. At other times, I saw the other day a young American soldier up on the tank treads doing a kind of a jive hip-hop dance for the Iraqi kids down below, and they were beginning to mimic and back and forth.
They were sounding good, too.
Well, they were sounding good, but you know, half a mile down the road, God only knows what's happening.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to tonight. I want to talk with you about music, and especially folk music, and how it fits into this new world, all bound up and wound up in the images and sounds and words of war when it's going on. It's not the same, I don't believe, as any war we've known before.
No, certainly not. It is I guess what I'm trying to say is somehow art is the job of art, you know, is to make sense of this world and point us in the way of our humanity. And everything we're seeing takes us away from that.
Well, my friend, you've got a very big job to do tonight, Dan. But we'll enjoy trying with you. Greg Greenway is with us tonight, folk singer, songwriter. We're going to go into the break with Runaway Train from his new CD, Something Worth Doing. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Boston.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. On Point Friday, and we're looking to take the conversation beyond words and into music a bit tonight with singer-songwriter Greg Greenway. He's with me here in the studio. Have you felt it? Have you felt the inability of words and certainly images to keep up with the pace of what's going on sometimes, to absorb what's happening here? You can join this conversation tonight. As you look out on everything going on, what are you humming? Is it Battle Hymn of the Republic? Is it I Ain't Marching Anymore? Does music live in the political realm anymore? Or is it all about emotion? Is music connecting to these images with you? Is it helping you make sense of what you're seeing and what you're hearing in the last 3 weeks? We're at 1-800-423-8255 with Greg Greenway. Greg, you mentioned a minute ago the kind of evolution of folk music. I mean, we know the tradition it comes out of, music for justice, music for peace, and music that has been very political in 20th century America. I want to talk about that with you, but maybe you can give us some kind of a example first. You've been a big interpreter of Phil Oakes, who was a very prominent folk singer in the 60s and at the heart of that whole kind of peace and justice.
Right. The anti-war movement.
Anti-war nexus, right, of folk music and anti-war. I think Crucifixion is the song that you've picked up from, again, on your new album, Something Worth Doing, from Phil Oakes. Let's hear it and we'll talk.
Okay.
And night comes again to a circle-studded sky. Stars settle slowly and loneliness they lie. Then the universe explodes as a falling star is raised. The planets are paralyzed, the mountains are amazed. They all glow brighter from the brilliance of the blaze. With the speed of insanity that he died. And the green fields are turning, a baby is born. His cries crease the wind and mingle with the morn. An assault upon the order, changing of the guard. Chosen for a challenge that is hopelessly hard. And the only single sign is the sighing of the stars. To the silence of distance, they are sworn. Come dance, dance, dance. Teach us to be true. Come dance, dance, dance. 'Cause we love. Then images of innocence charge him to go on. But the decadence of destiny is looking for a pawn. To a nightmare of knowledge, he opens up the gate. And a blinding revelation is laid upon his plate. That beneath the greatest love is a hurricane of hate. And God help the critic of the dawn. So he stands on the sea and he shouts to the shore. But the louder he screams, the longer he's ignored. For the wine of oblivion is drunken to the dregs. And the merchants of the masses almost have to be fed. Till the giant is aware someone's pulling at his leg. and someone is tapping at the door. Come dance, 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 teach us to be true. Come dance, 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 'cause we love you. And night comes again to a circle-studded sky. The stars settle slowly in loneliness they lie. Then the universe explodes as a falling star is raised. The planets are paralyzed, the mountains are amazed. But we all glow brighter from the brilliance of the blaze. With the speed of insanity, then he dies.
Greg Greenway singing, playing Crucifixion from his most recent CD, Something Worth Doing. It's a Phil Oakes song, Greg Greenway. Phil Oakes, of course, in the 60s, a big anti-war singer, composer. Tell us about your relationship with him, and as you stand here singing tonight with this war still going on, how does it all fit together? Do these songs resonate in the way Phil Oakes would have intended, would have imagined? Would this look like the old familiar to him? I mean, it is tanks and AK-47s.
Well, it's just a very different time. There was a great article in the New York Times the other day that said this is an anti-war movement without a counterculture. And I think this is a very important aspect of it, that we have people from all walks of life, all kinds of people that have reservations about this war or are for the war. So it's not, I think Vietnam took years and years and years to develop the protest movement. Mm-hmm. So I think what we have now is a lightning fast war. And we have people who are very confused about the issue. I myself am confused because, number one, I did not want to be in this war, but I find it very, very difficult to be in the street protesting while it's going on. So my response to this is I want to do what I can. You know, we're here now. We have to look at this practically. So my feeling is I need to express myself politically to the administration that did this. So. But I do want to support the troops. So it is confusing. It's confusing for me.
It's such a bundle. I mean, I've never heard more empathy for soldiers in my lifetime than I've heard during this war.
Well, they're us.
They are us. And this sense of responsibility that, okay, we were for it or we were against it, but our country has now sent these fellow citizens out to do this thing, which is not a fun thing to do, and which will scar them. We know that.
Change their lives forever.
And that sense of responsibility for them is there. But there's another envelope of responsibility, which is about the entire war. And even that, as you say, is hard to figure. Last week, you see these images of Iraqis celebrating. We had them on the phone right here in this hour, weeping with joy at what had happened. And yet there's that destruction.
Yeah, historically, you say to yourself, you know, are we England before World War II? You know, are we looking at a Hitler-like situation? So that complicates it. It very much complicates it.
But does it leave folk music kind of neutered somehow?
Well, it does.
It doesn't have clarity to sing to tune to.
Well, what it doesn't have is it doesn't have a consensus. When Phil sang things like "I Ain't Marching Anymore," he was singing to a whole crowd of people who totally, absolutely agreed with him. Mm-hmm. You know, he was basically giving words to a unified thought. And I think right now what we have is if you came out directly, you know, that adamantly one way, mm-hmm. you would be dividing your audience in half.
Benita's calling from Palo Alto, California. Hi, Benita. You're on the air.
Hi, Greg.
Benita, I think I know you.
You do know me. I am a big Greg Greenway fan, and I wanted to comment that, by the way, I'm listening to this on my computer.
Terrific.
If anybody's curious about how I'm listening
technology.
To this.
We broadcast in California, but maybe not in Palo Alto yet, Benita. We're glad you're with us.
Well, it's via the Internet, so in any case, I wanted to say from a songwriting standpoint, I wanted to comment how necessary the type of music that Greg is writing and has been writing for years. I've been a fan for many years of Greg's, and it is extremely hard to write the type of music that Greg writes.
In what dimension, Benita?
I know this because I, too, am a songwriter of sorts. And I won't even go into that area of trying to express the type of sentiments that Greg writes, because there's a very fine line between, I think, between coming across as holier than thou and preachy and knowing something that the rest of the world doesn't know, and being able to reach the people, reach the masses, and capture their attention and have something meaningful come across that doesn't sound preachy.
It is an incredibly tricky balance, especially today in the midst of all this kind of ambivalence that Greg describes. And I hear you responding to. It's wonderful to have your call from Palo Alto tonight, Benita, and we thank you for calling in. Greg's aglow with your fanship there. I want to hear some more music if we can. We were thinking earlier about how music in some sense can be an extension of a conversation, not direct, not exact, but if a folk singer had the ear, I don't know, tonight of people engaged in this war, or in a lens through which to help us understand, we thought about the confusion that soldiers themselves, they're so young when we look at their faces, that they must feel sometimes. You've got a song, In the Name of Love / Pride, that I thought, maybe this speaks to that, young man or woman.
Well, this song, it came out of visiting the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee, which is the site where Martin Luther King was assassinated. It's been turned into a museum. And friends of mine and I went to visit this site. And that night, we had to deal with all the energy that we got from going to this place. It was a remarkable place. They've done a beautiful job with this museum. You stand in a room that's a time capsule from April 4th, 1968, when this happened. And it's sort of in the same way we're talking about this confusion of emotion, because at one time it's immensely sad, but on the other hand, you are presented with the height of human courage, of moral courage.
Yeah, it speaks to that complexity of the American experience. We know every culture has the same thing. It reminds me of a verse from the Phil Oak song you just sang, "Beneath the greatest love is a hurricane of hate."
Yeah.
Let's hear it, in the name of love.
Yeah, so I must preface this by saying we borrowed part of this song from an Irish traditional band called U2.
Everybody will recognize that.
When I get tired, it's like I was dropped into the sea. You could swim your whole life and be nowhere you want to be. Everyone gets tired and the water is so wide. Well, then somebody comes and shows you. They show you the other side. There was a little man, barefoot and frail, he took a walk down to the Ganges. He took a lion by the tail. He made a way out of no way. One by one they saw the truth. He was ready when they told him. They said, history chooses you. We see so far in the name of love. We are standing on, in the name of love, the shoulders of giants. One more, in the name of love. Hey. And then there was another lion and a lamb. He walked into the heart of darkness, into the streets of Birmingham. He made a way out of no way. One by one we saw the truth. He was already on the mountaintop when they said, Memphis chooses you. We see so far. Standing. in the name of love, in the name of love, one more, in the name of love. Early morning, April 4th, shots rang out in the Memphis sky. Free at last, they took your life. They could not take your pride. In the name of love, one more. In the name of love, in the name of love, one more. In the name of love, out of no way, make their stories live and breathe, and we will never lack for heroes in our darkest hour of need.
Greg Greenway with In the Name of Love, Pride, from his CD, Something Worth Doing, inspired where Martin Luther King died, and part of the history that all of our soldiers now carry with them, you know, for good and ill.
That's right.
Into battles, even far away. I saw a young soldier on television, and he was saying, I don't want to be a killer. He didn't mean he didn't want to do his job, but he wanted to be doing it in such a way that it was just. That it wasn't just killing, but it was just as injustice. Greg Greenway, that song helps me tonight, and I thank you for sharing it with us. We're going to come back and talk more with folk singer, songwriter Greg Greenway. It's On Point Friday, in the middle still of war. We're trying to use music to take the conversation where words may not go. Here is You Don't Travel Like I Do from Greg Greenway's CD, Something Worth Doing.
Cloud you raise are the space you need to go somewhere without me. Then we both get time to sit alone. And wait for someone to come home.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm joined in the studio and awfully happy to be so tonight by singer-songwriter Greg Greenway. And we're looking at what folk music has to say in this time of super fast, super technicolor, super televised, and maybe super here and gone warfare. Greg Greenway, we were talking just in the break again about the images. And one of the images of this war that sticks so powerfully with me is of the Iraqi children beneath this incredible onslaught, the shock and awe and fire from the skies. And for all the much vaunted efforts to avoid civilian casualties, there have been many, and
sure,
those children have been among them. And trying to imagine how they process what's going on, I saw an image in Time magazine this week of this beautiful little boy, and he's in a wretched hospital bed, and both of his arms are gone. That's what he's taken from this war.
Right.
It gets very personal. Is there anything in your repertoire that would sing something near that?
Yeah, it gets to me like. war is so dehumanizing, and what the images we are seeing are so fantastic and very difficult to connect to sometimes, because it's beyond our experience. And imagine somebody as helpless as a child who can't understand what's going on around them. The information that's going even to his parents, they probably don't even understand what's going on around them. So there's no one to tell them, to really reassure them. What is to reassure them? Their whole world is going down the drain. It's being bombed away. Loud sounds, earth shaking. This is something that, as Americans, we will probably never be able to really directly understand.
We hope not. So, you wish it on no one. But we're bringing it to Iraq for all the reasons we've been told, but it's there.
Right.
So, something.
Yeah, so the point to me is that, we all have our journeys, and hopefully the end point of all of this is we get back to the human heart.
And the sun came up down an old dirt road, saying, hello, new day, hello. It shone on my back like a father's hand, saying, my son, you have grown. Sun goes up, moon goes down, of all things is still the heart. And the bum lay down in a rain wet street, saying,
Greenway singing Icarus from his album, singing for the landlord, and with that lyric, the measure of all things is still the heart. That's a folk message that lasts, Greg Greenway, and I guess it challenges us to hold to that measure.
That's right. It challenges to bring us back to that after all that we see, all the dissonance that we see.
And it is a lot. Just great having you in here tonight. I can't tell you how much I needed it. I hope our listeners appreciate it as much as I did. This studio has had so much sound of chaos and war and bombs and all the rest this week. I don't know if you're tuned up to sing A Road Worth Walking Down to take us out. Can you do that?
I can be there so quickly.
Great.
You can't
take,
believe
take us
it.
To it. Great. We've been listening tonight and joined by, and happy to be so, Greg Greenway. To find out more about Greg Greenway and his current national tour, log on to our website at onpointradio.org. Greg Greenway, thanks for being with us.
Tom, thank you so much. I'm glad that that I could be of some help to you.
You have to me and to many more. Greg Greenway's most recent CD is Something Worth Doing. Here he takes us out with A Road Worth Walking Down.
Yes, I have seen my brother stumble. I've seen my father fall like shadows from behind me, reaching out so far that I always wonder. My feet are so blinded if ever they'll find their ground.
In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this remarkable week.
This is George W. Bush, the President of the United States. At this moment, the regime of Saddam Hussein is being removed from power, and a long era of fear and cruelty is ending. American and coalition forces are now operating inside Baghdad, and we will not stop until Saddam's corrupt gang is gone.
We will continue to do all we can to avoid civilian casualties. Our enemy is Saddam and his regime, not the Iraqi people. Our forces are friends and liberators of the Iraqi people, not your conquerors. And they will not stay in Iraq a day longer than is necessary.
The scenes of free Iraqis celebrating in the streets, riding American tanks, tearing down the statues of Saddam Hussein in the center of Baghdad are breathtaking. Saddam Hussein is now taking his rightful place alongside Hitler, Stalin, Lenin, Kochetsky in the pantheon of failed, brutal dictators. And the Iraqi people are well on their way to freedom.
The looting began with government ministries and official buildings, but there was absolutely nothing to stop them, and it's now moved well beyond that. It's left people disillusioned and angry.
And what makes many ordinary Iraqis bitter is that all this is taking place under the nose of the most powerful military force on the face of the earth.
It's unbelievable, unbelievable. The people are honking their horns, dancing, singing, reading poetry, chanting, waving the Iraqi and the American flag. The most interesting sign I read was Saddam Hussein is gone with the wind.
It appears there's no functioning government in Iraq at the moment. We also saw the scenes of jubilation. But of course, when you think of the casualties, both military and civilian, the Iraqis have paid a heavy price for this.
I cannot answer the question. I told you, I repeat it again, the game is over. I hope the peace will prevail and the Iraqi people at the end of the day will have a peaceful life.
And there is a week. Jubilant Iraqis in Baghdad cheering the fall of Saddam Hussein's regime on Wednesday. President Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair speaking to the Iraqi people after the liberation of Baghdad on the channel that once carried Iraqi state television. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld saying that Saddam Hussein has been consigned to history along with Hitler and Stalin. BBC correspondent Raghi Omar reporting on the looting and chaos in a now unstable, to say the least, Baghdad. Ala Faik, an Iraqi who joined On Point from a celebration of Iraqis in Dearborn, Michigan on Wednesday. He left for Iraq the next morning. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan on the price Iraqi civilians have paid for their liberation. And Iraq's UN Ambassador Mohammed al-Duri saying that the game is over for Iraq and all he wants now is peace for his people. Jack Beatty from the images tonight, it's not exactly clear when Iraqis will have that peace.
Indeed, what we see on the television, it's a haunted piece for them right away. You know, the good, the bad, and the ugly of this war are all happening at the same time. And I've got three short quotations to illustrate them. One is the good from a man in Kirkuk who's hugging every foreigner he saw. And he said, "I was born today. Today is the first free day of my life."
Yeah.
The bad, reported in the Wall Street Journal, a Marine who had to shoot an Iraqi who was reaching for a gun. And he said, "Every time I close my eyes, I see that guy's brains pop out of that guy's head. That's a picture in my head that I will never be able to get rid of." 21-year-old American Marine. And then the ugly in Basra. The young man says, "One by one," speaking of the Ba'athist Party people, "one by one we will kill them. We will catch them by our hand and we will kill them by our mouth, not by a bullet, but by our tooth."
Sounds of sentiments of struggle to come in Iraq. The war has gone with remarkable speed to this point, but these images of the last couple of days make us think about how long this may have to go on. And the envelope around Iraq of the Arab press, the farthest thing from jubilation, talking about shame and humiliation in the defeat of this tyrant, Saddam Hussein.
Yes, and perversely seeming to wish for a longer Battle of Baghdad, even though, of course, that would have meant, inevitably would have meant civilian casualties.
But as a demonstration of Arab wherewithal in the face of the superpower.
I guess that's it. And even though there isn't any expressed affection in the region for Saddam Hussein, it seems more this sort of feeling of collective humiliation, as you say, that yet another imperialist power, Western power, has crushed an Arab state. We were talking earlier this week, and it is passing strange that in the last 15 years, the United States has liberated or intervened on humanitarian grounds to save at least six Muslim states, Kuwait, Somalia, Bosnia, Kosovo, Afghanistan, and Iraq. And yet, our image in the Muslim world could not be worse. And our foreign policy, that's what we've been doing the last 12 years, saving, as it seemed to us, Muslim countries.
What do you make of that, Jack? Is it the same thing, that it's just too much to accept to be the object of the hand of the superpower?
I think that must be a lot of it. You know, we've heard from Bernard Lewis and others just about how what a burden of shame and humiliation that region feels from essentially falling so far behind. You know, there was that study by the Arab intellectuals that just really said, you know, our problems are our own. I mean, lack of democracy, situation of women, education, lack of scientific training. These are serious things that have held that region back, along with these dictatorial governments.
But a lot for Americans to sift through as we look back on these weeks as well, Jack. Something like a victory quickly emerging here, though President Bush says he won't call it that yet, but clearly on the brink of it, so fast, so much power, and in that power a reminder of the responsibility of using it in Iraq and perhaps elsewhere.
Oh, yes, the responsibility. And that came up today in the press conference at Doha when a reporter asked, "Isn't the United States obliged to honor the Fourth Geneva Convention, which says if you conquer a country, what as Tom Friedman says, if you break it, you've got to fix it. You've got to have troops on the ground to provide some order." And I think here's the way, don't you, where the complaints that were dismissed by military embedded generals in studios, as Dick Cheney says, those complaints were dismissed about the lack of manpower. But here on the front page of the New York Times, we have a Marine commander saying, "We don't have enough men to police these places."
Great responsibility comes with the great power we have seen on display. Jack Beatty, thanks for being with us tonight and all this week. Have a great weekend.
And you too. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is